Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
This week, we're talking about summer travel. Now, if you're someone who can get away for a bit, the next big question becomes, where can you go and how can you get there safely? So today we've called upon New York Times travel columnist Elaine Glusak to help us out as part of our Ask an Expert series. Elaine has been reporting on the status of flights, hotels, and vacations in the time of COVID, including which airlines practice social distancing and how, and whether travel insurance is worth purchasing. She joins us now to share her reporting. Hi, Elaine. Welcome back to All of It.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, listeners, we want to hear from you. Are you planning a trip right now? Are you on the fence about whether to fly or not? Deciding between a hotel or an Airbnb? Call us with your comments or questions, 646-435-7280. That's 646-435-7280. You can always tweet to us if that's more convenient for you, or send us a message at Instagram. The same handle for Twitter and Instagram, at All of It WNYC. So speaking of tweeting, Elaine, you tweeted recently, "What I learned reporting this at New York Times travel piece, fly direct, sit by the window, don't get up, don't eat or drink, mask and face shield, oh, and look for an airline blocking middle seats." There's a lot to talk about there. Let's go one by one. Flying direct.
Yeah.
How possible is that right now?
Well, I mean, certainly from, a hub like New York, it is easy to go a lot of places direct because there still are lots of direct flights to places you might want to go in the United States, of course, and maybe in a little bit of the Caribbean, some of Mexico. Most of international travel is sort of closed off for now. But the idea of flying direct means you're just having fewer opportunities to, pass people in airports, go through security checkpoints. Every one of those, is a potential, infection point, basically. So if you can keep your travel, keep your air travel as short as possible, and a direct flight is one way to do that.
Why sit by the window?
Okay, so this is just, this is not scientific, but a couple of doctors and a couple of infectious disease experts said to me, "Where would you sit?" And I said, "The window." And the reason being that you have fewer people passing by you. So you don't have, the flight attendants constantly passing by you. You don't have all the other passengers going to seats behind you or going to the bathroom. I mean, and so if you can stay there in your seat in your direct flight for an hour or two without getting up and going to the bathroom, you're kind of in this, secure zone where you're not, potentially, exchanging air with other passengers. So that's potentially safer.
So this is the one I found interesting because this was an issue at one of the gigantic amusement parks, the not eating and drinking thing. Because is this causing the mask on, mask off issue?
Yeah, it is. And I mean, I personally think it would be really hard not to drink some water on a 2-hour flight. It's really dry up there. But I guess, maybe you just kind of do it, lift the mask up a little bit. But the whole idea is that you just want to keep covered so that you're not exposing yourself to, these respiratory droplets that are around you. Although, the airlines have installed and had these before, too, but they've increased the effectiveness of their filters, the filtration systems that they say, kill over 99% of all the germs in the air. But it's still, it's just safer if you can to keep it on as much as possible.
And let's talk about that last line. Oh, and look for an airline blocking middle seats. Who's doing this?
Not everyone is.
And yeah.
People have been very upset about it. I think when the virus first hit and air travel dropped over 90% and there are very few people on planes and it was easy to sort of space yourself out. But, in early July, almost 750,000 people passed through TSA, security checkpoints on one busy day. And while that's down from 2 million, normally, that's still quite a lot of people if you think about it, because a lot of the airlines have decreased the number of flights they're offering. And so they're filling them more. And a couple of them, American Airlines and United Airlines, have said if they can, they'll fill to capacity. So you don't even have that middle seat anymore. But there are a few airlines, including Southwest, Delta Airlines, and JetBlue that are still blocking the middle seats through, I think JetBlue is only through Labor Day, but the others through the end of September. And Southwest has said we may even extend that. So you have, you know, you're not getting your full 6 feet of social distance up there, but you might feel a little more comfortable at least having that, you know, space next to, you know, you're not rubbing elbows with somebody.
You know, it's interesting. I flew JetBlue just recently, and I filmed them twice, and they've been doing a really good job with the social distancing on the flights I've been on. And then something new that happened in the past 3 weeks, at least at JFK on the flight I was on, contactless boarding now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty, but it's a little bit of an ordeal, but it's worth it. I mean, it slowed down the process, but there were fewer people, but you definitely... They're definitely trying to, it's interesting that they're trying so hard. I'm curious, just as someone who is a travel expert, what's the difference between, I mean, in the thought process, I know you can't get in their heads, but why would one set of airlines be really going for it and really trying to do the right things and other ones not? Is it just bottom line money? Is it leadership?
Yeah, we've tried to get at that. And I really do think that in some cases, some of the carriers just really feel the economic need. I mean, they're just, you know, bleeding money, and they feel like, you know, their messaging is, oh, we've done all this stuff with cleaning and filtration and contactless boarding, and, you know, we're trying to keep people apart at the gates, and we think that we've done everything we can. But it seems like some people are going for the money, and then others are just, you know, realize that the public is, you know, very, you know, justly concerned about this. And yes, while we want to stay in business, let's do everything that we can, you know, while we can, for as long as we can. A couple of those airlines like Delta and Southwest, I guess, were in a better financial position going into this. But there's at least one senator who's, you know, was on one of these busy flights, Jeff Merkley of Oregon, and he has said that he came out with a big tweet about, you know, you can't possibly, you know, expect that COVID wouldn't be exchanged on this flight. It's packed to the gills. And he told me that he intends to introduce a bill that would require airlines to stop selling middle seats. You know, whether this gets off the ground or not, who knows? Might be very hard to pass. But, you know, his reasoning was, you know, we've made all these public accommodations for essential services, you know, like limiting the number of people in stores and one-way aisles. And, you know, if we deemed airlines to be essential, why shouldn't we also, you know, change the rules for how they operate?
My guest is Elaine Glusek, New York Times Frugal Traveler columnist. She's helping us with some information about getting out and about if you can this summer. Marilyn is on line one calling in from Manhattan, and Marilyn has a question. Hi, Marilyn. Thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, how are you? Yes, I have a question. My husband and I booked a trip to Europe back in the beginning of February of this year. And while coronavirus was on the news, it really wasn't something we thought we would have to be concerned about. So we went ahead and booked flights directly with several different airlines as we wanted to travel, fly in direct to Milan, Italy, for July, the beginning of July, and be back mid-July. Now, my question to you is, we booked with Emirates direct flights. We booked inter flights with Volotea. We booked with Priceline, a connecting flight with TAP Portugal. All of the airlines are telling us we get a voucher to use within 365 days of the now canceled flight.
Ooh.
And we just want our money back. We spent almost $3,000 on all the flights. We didn't book any hotels. And we want to know, besides Emirates, who is telling us back in May, oh, well, you're entitled to a refund. We haven't seen anything. What are our rights? Can we get our money back? I don't want to travel within a year to Europe.
Of course, of course.
I just want the money back. What can you tell me?
Elaine, where would you start if you were in this position?
Yeah, that is so thorny because there's so many different operators there. But according to the Department of Transportation, if a flight is canceled, if the airline cancels the flight, so it's nothing to do with anything that you did, but they cancel the flight for whatever reason, then they are legally required to give you a refund, a full cash refund. a lot of airlines have taken this opportunity in this chaos to offer vouchers instead. And a lot of people have taken them in their panic. But if your flight is canceled, you should insist on a refund. I don't know if Emirates has come through for you. And I don't know about the other, I don't know the other airline. I think you said Rolatea, maybe Alitalia. But I'm not sure what the liability would be with a foreign carrier. You might find, it might be a little bit more difficult to get your money back. Priceline sells discounted seats. Often those are non-refundable. But if they're offering you a voucher, that might, I'm just afraid that might be the best that you can do with them. I would have to see sort of the terms and conditions, but you do have your best chance with Emirates, and hopefully that's where your major ticket was, because that was the one into Milan, right?
Yeah, I think she took her answer off the air. Good luck. We wish you the best of luck. Let's go to Mark. Yeah. Mark is on line two, I think. Hey, Mark, thanks for calling All of It.
Hi, how are you? So my question is, you know, my wife and I have been living under quarantine conditions in a typical Brooklyn apartment for this entire time. We both work in the school system, so we're both on vacation. And, you know, we'd like to know if there's any safe and responsible option for a vacation. She's from Cartagena, Colombia, so typically we would go there. Obviously, sure. We can't, because nobody from the United States can travel to Colombia right now. We just took a road trip to Vermont, which was lovely. But, you know, is there any other option that's safe and responsible?
What are you thinking about, Elaine? You've written about this a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, like the road trip to Vermont. I mean, I'm just basically telling people, you know, stay local or regional, stay grounded. You know, if you don't want to do the flight, if you're worried about that, you know, stay apart from other people. There's lots of ways to do socially distant travel at, you know, remote resorts or campsites that are even set up with like glamping tents, so you don't have to have all the gear yourself. And then to make advanced reservations, because, you know, things are so busy right now. But I mean, for you, if you felt comfortable, you guys could fly to the Caribbean. You know, the rules there are very much a checkerboard based on the islands. Some require a COVID test before you get there. Some will give you a COVID test when you get there. Turks and Caicos just reopened last week. If you are thinking about Cartagena, I'm just thinking that's a nice, you know, tropical, you know, equivalent. Not exactly. Cartagena is pretty darn cultural and beautiful, but at least you'd get some sun.
We've got a lot of questions about where to stay. For example, Julie from Twitter: my family with two young kids has a vacation scheduled at the end of August, but don't know if hotels are safe. So many Airbnbs are booked up. Do we need to worry about germs in the hotel's AC system? Let's talk a little bit about hotels versus Airbnbs. First, for safety, do you have any sense about if one is more safe than the other? Are there things that you can ask for to make you feel more comfortable?
There are a lot of the major hotel chains, you know, the Marriotts, the Hiltons, the Hyatts, they have seized on this opportunity to convince travelers that they are clean as a hospital. You know, they're doing all kinds of disinfecting. You know, you won't get it from their services. You won't get it from their, you know, the air that you're breathing. Hilton even has this cleaning system where after housekeeping leaves, they put a sticker across the door. And so, you know, ideally you're arriving to that door and no one's been in there since housekeeping. So, you know, if that seal is broken, you don't want to go in that room because someone's been in there. So hotels have really made the case for hygiene, whereas Airbnbs have made the case for you're in control of your own living space. So it's more about privacy and staying away from other people. I personally think it's a little bit hard to always do the Airbnb thing if you're doing, say, a road trip that takes a lot of planning. So some of these hotels, especially the big ones, have pretty good track records with their housekeeping. Of course, all the fun things about a hotel, you know, the restaurants, the rooftop bars, gathering around the fire pit, that's not happening this summer, you know, and if there is dining, it's pretty socially distant or outside.
So a lot of people have questions about getting in terms of which is a better choice financially, a hotel or an Airbnb, given that you might be in a situation where you have to cancel. I know early on there were a lot of issues with Airbnb and some of these other operators not giving people their money back, or the hosts not giving people their money back.
Right. It was huge, huge controversy. And a lot of people lost a lot of money, and it was really very upsetting. And Airbnb came out on the side of travelers and said, okay, the hosts are going to give you back their money. Some of the hosts were, you know, didn't like it. But they came out ahead on that cancellation game. And, you know, hotels have always had really good cancellation policy. You know, generally speaking, I shouldn't say they're all that way, but mostly it was, you know, like a day or 24 to 48 hours in advance you could cancel, and they didn't take a deposit from you. So cancellation is a little bit less of a problem. I think availability right now is a problem.
Yeah.
And, I'm finding in some of these resort areas, it's really busy. Like, you know, people who are not going to Italy, who are not going to Canada, who are not, you know, leaving the country, they're going to these remote areas and it's really busy. I was, talking to a friend who's staying in Mackinac City, Michigan, and they were basically staying at Econo Lodge, which is, you know, just a very, basic chain, and they were paying $200 a night, which is pretty high for that kind of a brand. So as availability slips, then the rates go up. So it's a bit of a trade-off. You can probably get in somewhere, but you might be paying more this summer actually for that room.
My guest is Elaine Glusak from the New York Times. We're talking about how to travel if you get some time off. What should you do? Let's go to line three and Jordy. Jordy needs to get back to New York City. Hi, Jordy.
Hi.
Hi, what's going
on? I'm
here.
Well, I will be flying from San Juan Airport to JFK. And I understand, I'm very glad that JetBlue is not selling the middle seats. And I understand I should sit near the window, but I don't know how to handle reducing my time at the terminal. And about all of the people that will be handling my luggage. For example, when you leave Puerto Rico, they're agricultural inspectors. They put your bags through a separate screening and sometimes open them, touch your stuff, and then we have it with the regular inspection at the airport with the TSA. And so I'm concerned about whether or not my luggage can be contaminated, so what to do when I bring it home to not bring that into my house. And I'm also concerned about the airplane bathrooms.
Okay. Do you know anything about airplane bathroom? Let's start there.
Yes. I mean, I agree. It's flying from San Juan, you know, back to New York, you're probably going to have to go to the bathroom at some point. You know, that's not a quickie flight. You know, you have to get up and go to the bathroom. You just have to protect yourself as much as you can. Wear your face shield if you have one, or goggles if you don't, or some kind of glasses to cover your eyes. And of course your mask. You know, close the toilet seat before you flush it. That's a big thing. You don't want that sort of spraying around. And of course, hand washing, but, you know, then hand sanitizer when you get back to your seat. I think that's the best you can do. Fortunately, you know, a lot of infectious disease specialists are a little bit less concerned about surface or about contracting it from surfaces as opposed to actually getting it from respiratory droplets. But I think in terms of the luggage, you know, you could always, when you get it back in your possession, you know, wipe it down. If you have some of those Clorox wipes, you know, to wipe the handles down and the whole exterior. And then when you get home, just wash everything inside.
And I have to tell you that JFK is fairly empty. So I don't think you really have to worry about that many people. I was just there the other day. Not a whole lot of people hanging out. Everybody's got the same idea. People want to get in and out. Everybody's on the same page on this one. I have a question about, and I don't know if you know the answer. I hope I'm not throwing you a loop. Gabrielle and Brandon, both from Twitter, want to know, do you have any insight about traveling by train? What is going on at Amtrak?
I'm sorry. I have not covered them. My thinking about public forms of transportation, which, by the way, was my favorite way to travel before, is just a little bit, you know, in the gray zone, because now you're with a lot of people. I guess Amtrak is resuming a lot of services, and they're saying, of course, you know, like the airlines, that they're doing a lot of cleaning. They're also limiting seats, so you're spaced farther apart. But of course, generally with trains, you're on there for a longer amount of time than even driving.
So you're just exposed to more people while you're in transit. If you're wearing your masks and following all the safety advice, you know, you should be okay. But it's just a matter of the amount of time that you're together in a carriage with other people.
My guest is Elaine Glusek from the New York Times. We're talking about how to travel safely this summer if you think you can get out and about. Our number is 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. We have a few more minutes with Elaine. Or you can tweet to us or send us a message via Instagram at @allofitwnyc, if that's a little bit easier for you. So let's say you have decided, I want to do something. You wrote a great piece about RVs.
This is a
possibility. Like, if you just want to try something fun, tell us a little bit more about sort of this popularity, obviously the rise of popularity of RVs.
Oh, totally. I mean, to me, it's so logical, right? Because you basically, when you get an RV, you know, you get your house on wheels, basically. And more importantly, you get a bathroom. You get your own bathroom, you know? So everything is like under your control. You can sanitize it. You know, and you can take it everywhere you want to go. So you're minimizing your contact with other people because you have this remote house that you're driving around, and you have your own cook facilities. So potentially you're making your own meals, and all of that is within your control. So that is what people are, you know, telling us, or telling all the surveys that they like about RVs. It's just that sense of control. And RVs are becoming super popular this year. I mean, people are telling me, you know, they can't even get one. You know, it's just, the rentals are going crazy. But there's a lot of ways to get them. You can rent, you know, a new one from Cruise America, which is the largest RV rental company in the country, with about 5,000 RVs across the country. Mm-hmm. And then there's a couple of services that are kind of like the Airbnbs of RVs. One is called RV Share, and one is called Outdoorsy. And in those cases, you're renting from someone who owns an RV. So, you know, if they have it parked in their you know, driveway for 50 weeks a year, you can, you know, rent it from them for a couple of weeks and take it away. And usually you can get one sort of like in your area and just drive from where you live and carry on with your RV adventure. RVs are fairly affordable, so that's another attractive thing about them. But I would just keep in mind that while gas prices are really low right now, they only get 6 to 10 miles per gallon. So factor that in when you think about how far you're going to drive it.
We have a message from Twitter. Somebody had a great experience. We flew Delta to Chicago and drove up to Madison, Wisconsin. Wonderful trip. Flight was great and distant staff was professional. Hilton was super clean with lots of protocols. More recently, drove from New York City to Buffalo for a long weekend. Great food and hikes. So those folks have had a good experience. That's nice to hear. The last thing I want to ask you about before I let you go is travel insurance. Has travel insurance been worth it during COVID? Has it adjusted in any way to COVID?
Gosh. Well, the short answer is no. It's really, you know, as far as it's, what it does is very limited, and it doesn't, most of the major policies do not cover COVID. So most people want travel insurance because what if something happens and they have to cancel? So when that happened with COVID, It wasn't an allowable reason to cancel, which sounds crazy, right? It's a pandemic, but apparently a lot of these policies don't cover pandemics. They will cover you if you break your leg and you can't travel, if you lose your job, you know, if there's a death in your family. But if, you know, there's coronavirus in Italy, you weren't covered. So people found, you know, people thought that they had, you know, they had insured themselves in these expensive trips, and they, you know, their insurance companies came back and said, no, we don't cover that. The best we've been able to find out is that if your trip was canceled by, you know, a tour operator, we've had some success with getting some of these companies to refund the premiums that they paid for the travel insurance policies that were useless and they never used. But we really haven't found them to be very helpful with COVID. There is, you know, there's medical insurance is something different, and that's still worth looking into if you're going to do a foreign trip where your own medical insurance might not cover you when we're allowed to travel again for abroad. That's something different. But travel insurance as cancellation, it's not really covering you during COVID, unfortunately.
Gave us so much good information today. New York Times travel columnist Elaine Glusek, thank you so much for helping us out today.
Hey, thanks for having me on.